Now we go fishing in the ether as Bernadette McConnell tunes into the world of amateur radio.
I used to like sea fishing before I took this hobby up. Dangle a little hooks over the side and hope you get a monster fish. Well, this is the same. It's electronic fishing. You know, you put a call out, which is your mate, and then you hope that somebody comes back to you, which in very often did it, you know. I'll see if he'll get a contact for you.
It's a global village. You speak to the world. Not long after the Falklands War, I spoke to an Argentinian, Maritime Mobile. He spoke to me as a Britisher, as a hated enemy. No, as one person to another.
I've not found anybody yet on the airwaves that don't welcome you in, and though you're a complete stranger, you're in. It's like inviting them into your house. You're all there, you're all talking together, and after a little while you feel as though you sat together and you're strangers.
Of conveying messages over a distance without wires emerged from a series of experiments, starting with the discoveries of James Clerk Maxwell and Heinrich Hertz. In 1879, a Mr. David Edward Hughes produced electric sparks in his house at 40 Langham Street in London. He detected them at distances up to 450 metres while walking up and down Great Portland Street. Now there are 60,000 radio amateurs across Britain. They claim to be a fine, honest, upright bunch with a tradition to uphold.
It's raining here now. Is it raining where you are, old man?
They do call us the Anorak Brigade for some reason. And some of the older guys in amateur radio get quite concerned when you mention the word Tony Hancock. And they don't quite think it's the image that should be shown, although many parts of the Tony Hancock film are still true to this day. And those events do happen where you get called by certain people. I've never been actually called about bread pudding by anybody, but certainly there's been some very strange calls from certain parts of the world.
Da did it. Well, I think it's D for dog. Da did da did. C did da did it. L da did. N did da. A. Yes, not bad. Something like that, you see.
Send us a word like logarithm.
Oh, did I, did it, da 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 da. Did I, did I, did. Did it, da, did it. Did it, da da, I think. Anyway, I'm sorry about that.
That's not bad.
These men may or may not realise it, but they're the spiritual heirs of Valdemar Poulsen, who in 1902 developed the singing arc for producing continuous waves.
Ready? Yeah. Okay.
So to a hilltop site in present-day Surrey, amidst a welter of generators and erected aerials, to learn from the descendants of Clerk Maxwell and Hertz, in a tent.
CQ, contest CQ, Golf 6, London
Zero.
X-ray, contest, over.
Golf 1, Mike, Zulu, Delta.
Golf 1, Mike, Zulu, Delta, good afternoon, thank you very much. You're 59002 in India, Oscar 91 X-ray Hotel, QSL.
These practitioners of the art will spend up to 24 hours continuously on the air in contests at the weekends, just breaking off for the call of nature, I imagine.
73, QRZ, Golf 6, London, X-ray portable contest. QRZ, Golf 6, London, X-ray portable contest.
If you can work more than one contact a minute on phone, that's good. On the key, on Morse, you could work three contacts a minute in a good contest. And your scores, you don't really know until you feed all the results into the computer.
During the first hour of this contest, we were working two stations every minute. So we worked about, well, I think we worked 113 in the first hour.
Right, so we'll take it down into...
cross into France and
cross
Belgium.
Into France and Belgium and see how we do.
Maybe we get from Germany, but German we still.
Right. CQ, CQ, CQ. To northern France and Belgium. Appel General, Appel General, Appel General.
How refreshing to see people with this childlike fascination for what used to be called the wireless.
When I grew up, radios were a thing of some wonders. And electronics, you know, all this information, all this coming out of a few hot valves was something to behold. And it was unusual. I suppose the attraction goes back to that.
CQ from G8TB Portable, just after 4 GMT, calling CQ beaming to the east. G8 Tango Bravo Portable, G8TB Portable, calling CQ contest. Hello CQ, hello CQ, calling CQ. G8TB, calling CQ contest, and bye.
Wherever I went, delving into this world of amateur radio, this enchantment was always there. Returning home from school, wrote the pioneer P.P. Eckersley, I found our playroom filled with lovely and exciting instruments. There were induction coils to make fat sparks, Leyden jars, long black rods of ebonite, transformers and galvanometers. These things, their touch, their shape, gave me a sensual pleasure. Step up G7HRN.
It's one of those things start off at school when the science master introduces you to science and let's make the old crystal satellite, you know. And it's a great fun. We used to have our own little den in the field and tuning in each other, little spark transmitters, all illegal. We didn't know any better them days, but fortunately, just after the war, helped us out an awful lot, you know, with the surplus material coming on the market, the old transmitters and stuff. I know, first ones we got, we couldn't afford them being children, like, you know, 15, 16 years of age. We used to go on our bikes and go to Burtonwood Aerodrome, and planes are still flying over, and used to sneak into these old bombers and things and take out the radio sets and sneaking across the field, carrying them on our bikes and take them home, trying to get them working.
We did a little experiment, John, that I could try different mobile antennas out, you know. We actually two CB antennas that we managed to get to work on 17.
In 1901, Guglielmo Marconi, an Italian whose mother was Irish, transmitted the letter S in Morse code from Poldhu in Cornwall across the Atlantic to Newfoundland. It was a distance of 1,800 miles, and he used an aerial suspended from a kite.
There's the antenna system. It's just on the gable end of the house. It's reminiscent of a Christmas tree with all the projections.
Well, we have a tower which is up about 55 feet, and on top of that we have what we call a beam antenna, something like a TV antenna, only of course it's bigger. It covers the frequencies that we use.
I've got a rotatable dipole for 17-metre band, which I was speaking to John on this morning.
I'm very limited for space here, being in a suburban-type dwelling. The aerial I was just pulling up there is a dipole, which is commonly known as a ZEP or a G5RV. So I have planning permission for it, of course.
I spent an awful lot of time digging the foundations of that mast in the garden there, because I didn't want it to blow over. And the next door neighbour, I said, I'm putting a radio beam up here, do you mind? Oh, no, I don't mind. Like, you know, what's in your garden, Morris, is your business. What's in my garden is my business. So one day, he's in his garden, I'm in my den here, I rotate the aerial, it's 30 feet high, and my end element crosses his garden. 30 feet up, 24-inch piece of aluminium, quarter-inch thick, over passes his land. Bang, bang, bang on the door. Take that down. I'm not having it. It's over my land. We never spoke from that day to this.
Have you ever spoken to Morris, John? G7HRN. He lives in Thirlwall. Have you ever spoken to him, John? Over.
No, I haven't. G7 HRM. It's not in the log, not immediately. And it's not a very old...
In the early 20s, the Marconi Company began experimental transmissions of wireless telephony from Rittle near Chelmsford, from a shed. The tradition remains. Today, the Amateur Radio Operating Manual 3rd edition says, fairly soon it becomes inconvenient to set up your system on the kitchen table for each session, and a permanent place in the home should be found for it.
Everyone refers to it lovingly as the shack, the radio shack. It could be the corner of the dining room. In fact, some operators, you can hear the television in the background when they're speaking. Exactly, you know, but they're still in the shack.
G4WILG7HRN. Do you copy me, John?
Yeah, G7HRN, G4WIL. OK, Morris.
I wasn't very pleased when my wife said she was always complaining about the noise, and I can't blame her because it is a noisy environment, I suppose. If she's trying to watch TV on it and got a complicated pattern, she won't want to be listening to me shouting DX, does she? So... from that point of view, it was better for me to move outside.
Molly, my wife, she got a little bit fed up with me in there. That was her greenhouse there. I had so much stuff in there that one day she came in to water the tomato plants and she was so upset when she couldn't move. She just grabbed all the tomato plants and slung them all out. She said, right, you can have the place. Build me another. So I built this one in the corner. That's her place. This is mine. She's got the flowers and the plants and the seeds going. I've got everything going in here. So I keep out of her domain, she keeps out of mine.
You might have been slightly off frequency because it was a little tiny bit distorted with me, but I've managed to pick you up again now. I don't think you're quite as strong as you were, but stand by one moment. John, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Colin's okay with me. It's you that are moving, Pat. Your frequency has shifted a bit. We're still dead on 3685, as is Colin.
From the beginning, radio amateurs said their aim in transmitting was to serve a high scientific purpose. This is not Citizens Band Radio. It's a different class from Rocket Ron, who, microphone in hand, whispers sweet nothings to Mystic Meg from his lorry. Your licensed radio amateur goes to evening classes for months on end, learning how to use the ionosphere as a bouncing medium, how to suppress his harmonics, and how to tell his upper from his lower sideband. These are the classical scholars of the airwaves.
GW4 Baker Victor Nan, GW4 NZ. I wonder if you're about, Tom.
Oh, yes, Roger, fine, sir. GW4 New Zealand. GW4 Baker Victor Nan returning fine, and a very good afternoon to you, sir. Nice to hear you. Very dull and overcast down here today. Looks as if we're going to start to have rain again.
The conditions of the licence normally is that you talk about the weather, what radio you've got, what antenna you've got, the boring things of radio. It's becoming more open nowadays. We talk about work. You've got to keep away from politics and religion, by law.
Yes, okay, fine, Tom. GW4 Baker Victor and GW4 NZ returning. Yes, very good afternoon to you. Well, it's, it's gone dull and overcast here now too, Tom. We did have it quite nice earlier on.
Basically, all you're allowed to say to anybody is you can send messages relating to technical investigations or make remarks of a personal character. And that's it. That's all you're really allowed to do.
You don't create arguments, in other words. So we chat about things that are interesting to you, like John, I was telling me all about his bees.
I am a beekeeper, and that's another facet of the hobby. I.e. there is a network of beekeepers, and they actually, on a Sunday morning, 8 o'clock local time, on the 80-metre band, 3.722 megahertz, they meet and they discuss bees.
Just one or two wasps were actually entering the hive and not being challenged. Just the odd wasp was creeping in the bottom of the hive, obviously stealing a little bit of honey, to try and eat their lifespan out a little, because they'll eventually die before winter, will the wasps.
Hello, CQ. Calling CQ.
You put out a call. It's known as a CQ call.
Calling CQ. Hello, CQ. Hello, CQ. Hello, CQ. Calling CQ.
That's the letter C and the letter Q. Basically means what it says. I seek you. Seek you out.
You go fishing. You call. And you never know whether you're going to get a minnow or a salmon. You could get Joe from down the road, or you could even get King Hussein from Jordan, which a YL, a young lady in the district, used to converse quite regularly with Hussein. She was what we call a white stick operator. She was blind. And now they have a system of cards called QSL cards. It confirms a contact. If you've made a contact with someone and you wish to, you know, to tell your friends, you can show them a card that's been sent to confirm this. And they're saying sent Alice one in Braille, which I thought was awfully nice.
We in the radio game tend to sort of breathe out a lot of words, like QSL cards, which is acknowledgement of signal reports. Because if you're talking to a Russian or Japanese that doesn't speak English, it's no good keep on saying to him, well, you've got a lot of trouble there, mate. Have you got a lot of trouble? You say QRM, and he understands that you've got a lot of static problems, your end or his end, and then you can overcome it. It's called a Q code.
Part of the skill of being a radio ham is the ability to bandy around the world the verbal equivalent of Egyptian hieroglyphics. Instead of saying goodbye, it's 73s. Instead of Morse, it's CW, continuous wave. And if you fancy DXing, you're trying to contact foreign climes. Some useful expressions. QSD, is my keying defective? QRN, I'm troubled by static. And QRM, I'm being interfered with.
XYL, of course, it simply means ex-young lady. So your wife was your young lady, she is now your wife.
The only thing different you'd say to a lady amateur would be 88. That means love and kisses, you see. Well, it's just everybody does it, you know. You say love and kisses with your permission.
All these, the jargon that hams use, when you think about it, they've all come from the days when Morse code was the only means, so they had to have little abridged versions and quick ways of communicating. You'll be talking on the microphone to a station in the Argentine, and he'll say 73s. He'll also refer to you as old man. Fine business, old man, he will say. Instead of saying communications are good, OM on the Morse represented old man. Old men, you know. I mean, obviously there were gentlemen who initiated radio. And the old man are stuck. But they all stem back to quickly getting the message across with a very laborious method, Morse code.
It should always remain a part of amateur radio. It's the mother and father of amateur radio.
My name's Ron, but on the airwaves I sound more like G3KTZ. That's my call sign. This gear here is I'll use this for Morse. I don't use voice at all on it. As a matter of fact, where you plug the microphone in here, I've got it blanked off to keep the dust out. Because it's never had a microphone on it in its life, this piece of equipment.
So superior is Morse, says the book, to even RF-clipped SSB as a DX mode on the HF bands, but it's been estimated that the difference is roughly equivalent to at least a 20 decibel power gain.
Frequently talk to people in the States, in New Orleans, say people in New Zealand or Australia. There's a couple of people down there that I know quite well. There's Ivan Mavis, that's the man and wife team. They're on quite frequently. Talk to them on 20 metres. It's just like talking another language. If you could understand how people speak French, well, once you learn to speak Morse code, it's an automatic translation that you don't need to think about. It just sort of happens.
When conditions are really poor and you can't hear speech properly, you can decipher Morse code. It's amazing. That clear tone that you heard then can sometimes, in very bad atmospheric conditions, just be a tsh, 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 but you will still recognise dots from dashes, and you'll still be able to understand.
To be or not to be, from William Shakespeare. They say Morse can be poetic. Didn't sound too poetic to me. There are certain parts in Morse that can sound like that. That's the best beef essence. We use that to test people out to see if they're sending fluently and the correct spacing, because if you don't send it right, it doesn't come out right.
Eric and David are a father and son. They keep a post office in the district, and when they pass their Morse tests, they immediately set up a little station, and they were sending Morse code night after night after night. But during lulls in the sending, when they were just using normal speech, I could hear Morse in the background. Very precise Morse, but gibberish. The characters were perfect. I said, have you got your HF set on? I said, I can hear CW, I can hear Morse code in the background. I said, but it's gibberish. I said, that's our budgie. The budgie had been sat there in the corner of his shack listening to him sending Morse night after night. And he was copying him.
There's something oddly Masonic about all this. To an outsider, it's like an enclosed order. Could there be an electronic lodge of the Masons? Could the City and Guilds exam be an initiation ceremony? What about the codes, the jargon, Morse, a secret handshake? The shack, is it the lodge? Do they wear aprons in there? Radio amateurs may not take an oath of allegiance, Masonic or otherwise, but they're fiercely proud of their call-signed world.
To some people, the studying for and passing the exam is probably a pinnacle of their lifetime's achievement, and they jealously guard the licence. And I can imagine people being a little bit upset when they have the radio in the car, and if you get somebody in the car with you and they say, well, what's that, a CB? Oh no, that's amateur radio, you need two City and Guilds for that. Switch it on and there's somebody mucking about on there. It makes it sound rather silly.
Well, somebody's jamming here again, a bit more serious. Walkers needed, I think. Get on down to the CF RAF, because jamming CF is where it's at. Get on down to the CF RAF, because jamming CF is where it's at. Well, that shut them up, didn't it?
You get pirates to come on and absolutely ruin your transmission. You get your contact, you're talking to them nicely, you're enjoying yourself, and then they come on, what you call bucket mouth, swearing, making noises. Now, it's about time the DTI come up and actually went out and cleaned these airwaves up, sorted these people out, people that was using illegal frequencies, using too much power, and stopped them.
I'm going to sit here and I'm going to communicate with my friend out there and you can get stuffed.
These are the people we want off the air. The DTI should clean them up, get rid of them, prosecute them, take all the gear off them, teach them a lesson.
Who's afraid of the DTI?
Now step up Robert Hitchcock, not a pirate but somebody who did incur the wrath of those watchdogs of the airwaves, the DTI, for amongst other things playing this record.
It was 1991, 7th of June 1991, and I'd just come back from the pub. I'd been there with a few other radio hams and we'd be doing the quiz, the trivia quiz, and we'd won some money and we'd had a few drinks. And I came back here about 11:30 that night. There was a ring on the door bell, so I looked out the window, because it's a little bit late, it's a bit unusual somebody coming around that time of night, and there was a group of men downstairs all wearing dark clothes. I'd recognise any of them, and while I looked out the window, one of them started to kick the front door. So I thought, oh, there's something funny going on here. So I got the phone, I dialed 999 before it had got through, and they said, which service do you require? They'd actually broken the door down, come through the secondary door upstairs, and there was a man there with a a piece of paper, which turned to be a search warrant, thrusting it at me like this, saying, DTI raid.
Robert Hitchcock was a licensed amateur. He had a call sign. But after a week-long hearing before the Crown Court, he was fined £3,500 plus £6,000 costs and told he was an unfit person to be a radio amateur.
I haven't done anything evil and dangerous. I just take it lightheartedly, not seriously. I mean, I have been known to talk in an odd voice, which a couple of people refer to me as Dame Edna, but I used to talk in a high-pitched voice just to be a bit different, because, of course, you're only recognised by your voice on the radio, and I like to be instantly recognisable.
Hello, everybody. I'm stuck in a church.
They don't like it up on you now. We have a conversation with somebody and say, well, it wasn't very funny, was it? And play a bit of the laughing policeman, but of course, you know, you're not supposed to do that sort of thing. That one has been modified slightly. It's just the laugh there. No, it's funnier like that.
But it was no laughing matter when Robert Hitchcock was threatened by those licensed not just to transmit, but who thought they were licensed to kill.
I've been threatened by other radio amateurs. Threatened with death. They wrote a letter to the local police and said they were going to firebomb the house and run my car off the road and kill me. This was a threat. I don't believe anything was ever done about it. We didn't take it that seriously. But I get phone calls. I had a phone call once. Somebody phoned me up and asked me if I needed my car respraying. And I said, no. And he said, well, I've just had somebody come and bought 2 gallons of thinners and they're going to pour it over your car. And I asked him if these people had a grudge against the Guardian Royal Exchange Insurance Company. And they said, no, they've got a grudge against you. And I said, well, why don't they come and pour it over me instead then? And he put the phone down.
Hitchcock couldn't understand the reverence that other amateurs have for this magical world, where you can throw a piece of electricity into the sky, and if conditions are right, who knows where it might land, and who you might speak to. Fishing in the ether, casting their lines like their spiritual forefathers, Hughes and Marconi, Ditcham and Eckersley.
When I close that door and I'm in here, I'm in my own little world. I can do what I want, say what I want if I'm talking to somebody.
But when I feel a little bit low sometimes, a little bit depressed, to not being able to work anymore, I come in here, I switch the radio on, and very quickly I forget all my, you know, troubles and what have you.
There's more good comes of amateur radio than the other, and you'd be surprised. You speak to foreign nationals and it's the similarities you look for. You'll find that people are people. You'll find that people are very, very similar. They've the same fears, they've the same hopes.
Take care, very much enjoyed chatting to you, and look forward to the next one there. See you again. G0TDL, G3 Radio Fox, X-ray, just listening. Bye-bye.
Fishing in the Ether was presented by Bernadette McConnell and featured the voices of Austin Donnelly, John Williams, Doug Goodison, Ron Lindsay and Maurice Jeffrey. The producer was Alistair Wilson.